You know something, Sheriff? I did something real bad that I didn't put on my application to become a deputy, and I just felt guilty about it, and I just wanted to tell you. When I was about 6 years old, my mama bought me this little white dog, and I played with it the first day, and I got it, like, real dirty. So I was scared, so I wanted to wash it, so I put it in the toilet, and I was, you know, washing it with baby powder and everything, and it got all messed up, and I figured, well, I gotta dry this little pooch off, you know? So I didn't want to put it in the dryer, because, you know, I thought it would get hurt, you know, rolling around in that thing. And so I put it in the deep freeze that my mother had out in the garage. And I went out and played and had a good old time, and I forgot about it. And later on that day, my mama went into the freezer to get a pot roast out. And there was that poor old dog, frozen solid. I guess he was trying to bark or something because, you know, he had his mouth open like...
Junkie Dinner Episode 84. This week we see what happens when Chinese martial arts star Jimmy Wang Yu teams up with Australian cult director Brian Trenchard-Smith in the 1975 kung fu action flick The Man from Hong Kong. Then, during the Prohibition era, a woman and her two daughters set out on a cross-country crime spree in the Roger Corman-produced sexy action comedy Big Bad Mama from 1974. And finally, Chuck Norris stars as a Texas sheriff who will stop a killer who was brought back to life by a medical experiment in the 1982 sci-fi action thriller Silent Rage.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 84. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host Mark Fredo in New York and Parker Bowman in California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we take a look at The Man from Hong Kong from 1975, Big Bad Mama from 1974, and Silent Rage from 1982. But first, gentlemen, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty cozy.
Cozy?
Are you not cold anymore?
Not cold anymore. It's pretty warm in here. I turned the heat up. I'm wearing a hoodie. I'm doing all right. I got some red wine. Everything's looking warm for me.
You got a fire going?
Yeah, I got a fire going.
Bearskin rug.
You have a little cask of brandy tied around your dog's neck?
Indeed I do. I have some Russians outside my house.
Yeah, sounds like it.
That equates to being warm as well, I believe.
Throw another orphan on the fire.
Sweet.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, how's life in NYC?
It's fine. It's not cold. It's actually kind of grossly warm. I keep leaving the house in... you know, like a sweater, like a cardigan, or, you know, a nice coat, because I'm rich. And then it's super hot. It's like 65 degrees here.
Yeah.
Party unnecessarily time. Hot. Yeah. So, but otherwise, it's fine. Last night, for the Midnight at Spectacle Junk Food Dinner presented, I was a teenage zombie. And it was about a billion degrees in the theater for some reason. So, I had to turn off the space heaters and stuff and, like, apologize to people. I was trying to figure out if I could feasibly leave the door open while we were watching this movie, but I decided I didn't want any of these Russians that are outside coming in.
Yeah, maybe the movie was just too hot for the audience to handle.
It could be.
Well, no, that's an awesome movie. Glad you got to show that there in the big city. People seem to like it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of laughs. Good times were had by all.
Nice. And then you guys had the Night Dreams showing at the
Spectacle before Theater? on Friday, the midnight was Night Dreams, presented by Cinema Villains / Side Door Cinema, and that was super fun. Night Dreams, of course, by Jerry Stahl, Rince Dream, Steven Saadian, who did Dr. Caligari, which we talked about on the show. And, it's just super, super weird, surrealistic porno. So it was fun. Didn't have to leave the lights on or spray anybody with a fire extinguisher or anything, so it was okay.
Yeah, the film is probably most notable for an infamous scene where a woman has sex with a box of cream of wheat.
And a slice of toast.
And a slice of toast.
who's playing saxophone while he gets a blow. Can we say blow on the show?
I think so.
Okay, I'll bleep it out.
Excellent. Yeah, speaking of old porno, I've spent a good majority of this weekend watching Dave's Old Porn, that show on Showtime with Dave Attell. It is really funny. I would definitely recommend it to anyone who enjoys vintage porno and Dave Attell and stand-up comedy.
See, I think I only enjoy old porno. I don't think I like Dave Attell.
He's good. I mean, I don't know. There are some things that he's kind of douchey about, but he's pretty quick, and his style works well for this type of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'd check it out if I had Showtime.
Yeah. But yeah, so you can find it online, and it's definitely worth checking out, so I would recommend cool. it.
Yeah, I watched the first episode. It was really funny.
Yeah.
Does he talk about night dreams? What kind of? I mean, or is it just like standard old porno?
Well, he talked about, I think the first episode.
Straight fucking.
He talked about Bad Girls 1, 2, and 4.
Yeah.
And
all starring Ron Jeremy has different people.
Right. And he had Ron Jeremy on the show, which was funny. It must be pretty awkward to watch, like, talk to someone as you watch them fuck on screen in front of you.
I believe that.
All right, well, let's get into some junk mail. We've got some good listener feedback this week. The first piece of listener feedback we got was from longtime listener Jonathan Knight. He says, "Hey, guys, your last show was great. I need to check out Chained Heat sometime. Checked out some flicks recently that I heard about on JFD. Parker was right. Thanksgiving was fucking hilarious. I haven't laughed I haven't laughed this hard in a long time. I ordered it instantly after watching it on Netflix. I also watched Truth or Dare, Critical Madness, although I had some issues with the first hour. The final hour rocked. Once Mike went on his killing spree, I was sold on this movie. I heard you guys mention another Tim Ritter movie on the last show, Killing Spree. Blind bought it instantly after watching the trailer. I'll let you know what I think. I actually just got my copy of Killing Spree in the mail this week and watched it again after seeing it at the Spectacle Theater. And yeah, it's awesome. So I think you'll definitely enjoy it, John. So definitely let us know. He asked, by the way, has anyone watched any of the Truth or Dare sequels yet? I have not. Have you guys seen any of those?
No, I know there's a Kickstarter right now for Truth or Dare 4.
Jesus.
Always with the Kickstarters. Yeah, no, the third one's on Netflix, but the second one isn't, so I didn't want to skip ahead. But I do...
Yeah, you don't want to get lost.
Yeah, I do really want to see them, though, because I really want to get to the bottom of whether or not that guy actually killed people or not. Because I still contend that he did not.
Right. He finishes up by saying, "Well, guys, keep kicking ass with these shows. Honestly, your podcast is the only one I haven't given up on yet." So thank you, Jonathan. He also followed up his email with a couple comments on the blog. He said he downloaded Wizard of Space and Time and watched it and loved it. He said it was a crazy and weird fun time. Highly recommend it. So, yeah, that's awesome. Speaking of the Wizard of Speed and Time, listener Jonathan Wells, another John, said, "Stoked to hear you guys chat about the Wizard of Speed and Time. I caught that on VHS as a kid. I don't remember much except the jumping on the wall part, and I thought that was cool. Sounds like I'm definitely going to have to revisit this one." So, yeah, definitely, if you have a chance, hunt down a copy of that movie. It is a fun watch. All right, well, let's get into some nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
The first piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like it was, man, a terrible sign of the times at the box office this week. We had the number one film in the country was The Immortals. They brought in $32 million over the weekend. I don't know. How do you guys feel about this? I watched the trailer. It's from the guys that did 300 and looks kind of along the same lines, a very epic Greek mythology war movie.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, I want to see this. It's, you know, it's Tarsem who did The Cell and The Fall. The Fall I actually genuinely like, and The Cell, it's kind of a guilty pleasure, at least visually I think it's pretty fantastic. So I imagine this will kind of be the same thing, you know, not a lot in terms of substance, but just, like, awesome to watch. I've heard there's actually some Holy Mountain references and stuff in this, so, I mean, I'll check it out. I don't have anything super invested in this, but at least Jack and Jill wasn't number one.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up. Yeah, Jack and Jill, number two at the box office.
Oh, shit, are you serious?
Yeah, with $26 million, which will ensure more Adam Sandler buffoonery in the future, I'm sure. So, yeah, that just made my soul hurt when I saw how much money that thing took in. And, like, it seemed like people were making fun of this online, you know, well before it came out. As soon as the first trailer came out, people were, you know, just, you know, saying this was the worst thing to ever be released. And
yeah,
it's gotten, I think, still a 0% critics rating on Rotten Tomatoes. But conversely, it's got, like, a 69% fan rating. So it just proves there's no accounting for taste, I guess.
It just proves that everybody has the internet.
Right. Well, yeah, somebody went and saw it, like I said, yeah, 26
those
million.
Those are the same people that yelp about Rite Aid.
Yeah. But yeah, then we had Puss in Boots at number three, Tower Heist at number four, and J. Edgar at number five. So, rough week for movies. In more hopeful nerd news, Sacha Baron Cohen is in negotiations to star in the new Quentin Tarantino movie, Django Unchained. Variety is reporting that the star of Borat, Bruno, and The Dictator is now in advanced negotiations to join the cast of Tarantino's upcoming tale of a former slave turned bounty hunter. Should this work out, Cohen will join Jamie Foxx, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Christoph Waltz in the cast as Scotty, a gambler who buys Django's wife. So, I don't know. That sounds pretty cool. I know Quentin Tarantino always has a way of getting, you know, kind of quirky actors to play cool roles, and I think Sacha Baron Cohen could do a good job of something in this film. So I'm excited to see this.
I don't know. I hate that guy.
Oh, come on.
No, yeah. I think he's just super obnoxious. I think he's a one-trick pony. So yeah. if there's a Borat in this new Quentin Tarantino movie, I'm going to have to skip it.
I'm excited for this. I like that guy. I think he's great.
Yeah, I think he's good. We'll have to agree to disagree.
I heard he's actually going to be in Jack and Jill 2.
Now that I would see. No, not true. In other news, we have Roger Corman is being honored with a full-fledged documentary about his cult movie empire called Corman's World, Exploits of a Hollywood Rebel. This is a documentary that's going to go through the weird and wonderful exploits of Roger Corman and New World Pictures that brought many new directors to the forefront, including Jack Nicholson, Martin Scorsese, actors like Robert De Niro, Jonathan Demme, Ron Howard, James Cameron, all the folks that got their start in Roger Corman's cheapy movie house. So yeah, I think this will be really cool. It's got a lot of interviews from big stars who got their start with Roger Corman, as well as directors who were influenced by Roger Corman's work. And since we've been inundated with these Roger Corman Cult Classic Collection DVDs, and we've been boning up on the Roger Corman world of film, this will be a nice little side watch. So I'm excited to see this. It's going to get a limited theatrical release December 16th, and will probably be released on home video and video on demand shortly thereafter. So yeah, can't wait to see this. Looks good.
Yeah, I stumbled upon the trailer the other day, and then I was like, oh my god, I gotta send this to Kevin. I wonder if he's heard about this. And then I sent it to you, and then I forgot all about watching the trailer myself, because I got sidetracked.
Yeah, well, you should. It looks really good.
Yeah, yeah, I'd assume that it would. It seems pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you like schlocky cult movie news, you'll enjoy this. A new movie coming out called Strippers vs. Werewolves. As if the zombie strippers weren't enough with the Jenna Jameson movie Zombie Strippers, now we have Werewolves versus Strippers. The synopsis says, when werewolf chief Jack Ferris is accidentally killed in a strip club, the girls who work there have until the next full moon before his bloodthirsty wolf pack seek murderous retribution. Before you say no way, this does have Robert Englund, a.k.a. Freddy Krueger, in the mix as, I think, one of the members of the bloodthirsty wolf pack seeking murderous retribution on the strippers. I doubt this will get a theatrical release, so look for Strippers vs. Werewolves on a DVD shelf near you. Mark, you sounded pretty excited about this.
Yeah, I'm not actually. I don't know. I don't want to come across like I'm excited about this because I'm not. I think it's stupid.
Why do you hate werewolves so much and strippers?
I don't. I just I hate crap like this.
I don't know. This sounds like Oscar bait to me.
Christian Bale's in this, right?
Right.
I'm not going to watch that.
All right. Fair enough. I probably won't either.
It's on you, Parker.
I suppose I'll have to.
Yeah, you'll have to watch this and let us know how it is. I mean, you do have a Freddy Krueger tattoo. I think you're obligated to watch any Robert Englund movie.
That's true. That's pretty much how my life has been thus far. Right. Robert Englund, I'm in.
Final piece of nerd news I have. It looks like MGM has brought the rights to Where's Waldo and is looking to bring it to the big screen.
God damn it.
Who would you get to play Waldo in the Where's Waldo movie?
Nobody.
Come on. Play along.
Rowan Atkinson.
Robert Englund, I guess.
Fuck.
Good deal. But anyway.
Do they have anybody slated?
No, it was just announced that MGM has purchased the rights to Where's Waldo and are planning on making it into a movie. So it's in the very early development stages at this point. So if it ever does happen, it will be a while before we see it. So
it's not like it's time sensitive and that anybody who wasn't alive in 1997 is going to give a shit about it.
Yeah.
Or not even 97, like 92 or something.
Yeah, anybody who's ever been to, like, a dentist's office at this point has probably seen, like, a Where's Waldo poster. So.
Yeah. Coming
Strikes
soon after this.
The iron is hot.
Coming soon after this will be the Goofus and Gallant movie. Which would actually probably be pretty sweet. I would see that.
I wonder if they'll change the name to Where's Wally in England.
I'm going to change my Robert Englund answer and go with Jason Statham. Because when you find Waldo, then he will kick your ass. I think that's what the movie will be about.
Now, that would be good. I would see that.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into some of the cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The first release we have is Evil Dead 2 25th Anniversary Edition. Comes out this week on DVD and Blu-ray. Everyone knows Evil Dead 2. It's awesome. If you've already purchased this, you're probably not too thrilled about purchasing it again. But it is the 25th Anniversary Edition, some new bonus features. And a nice, glossy new Blu-ray release. So if you don't own the movie, now is a good chance to buy it. I, for one, have bought this movie way too many times to be purchasing this again. I mean, I would really like to have the Blu-ray, and it's pretty cheap. It's like $10 on Amazon right now. But I was thinking about buying it this week, and I was like, looking at the 4 copies of Evil Dead 2 that I already have sitting on my bookshelf, and I was like, can't do it. Not until I get at least 3 of these out of my house.
Yeah, I can't get this 25th anniversary edition because I already have the 24th, the 23rd, and the 22nd anniversary editions.
Right.
I've never seen this. Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. But yeah, those Evil Dead movies have so many editions out, especially like Army of Darkness. There's like 400 DVD versions of that.
Yeah.
Everyone with, like, one more bonus feature than the last.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where the DVDs of Army of Darkness don't even have covers anymore. Like, it's just, like, chalk writing. It's silly.
Yeah. Next release we have is Bellflower from 2010. Bellflower is a heartfelt story of obsession, friendship, young love gone awry, and angst-ridden critique of the Generation Y. It's a debut feature from mad scientist filmmaker Evan Glodell. Best friends Woodrow and Aiden spend all their free time building Mad Max-inspired flamethrowers and muscle cars in preparation for a global apocalypse. But when Woodrow meets a charismatic young woman named Millie and falls hard in love, he and Aiden quickly join a new group of friends, setting off on a journey of love, hate, betrayal, infidelity, and extreme violence, more devastating and fiery than any other apocalyptic fantasies. I don't know. I saw the trailer for this. This looks pretty interesting. I don't like the fact that it's a Generation Y tale starring two characters named Woodrow and Aiden. That sounds wretched to me. But I do like Mad Max inspired flamethrowers and muscle cars and extreme violence, so I might have to give this a watch.
I have no strong feelings about this either way.
Yeah, I mean, take out the Mad Max inspired flamethrowers and muscle cars and the extreme violence, and I want nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
But those two elements, they got me.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Next release we have is Humongous from 1982. A group of teens on a boat find themselves in a fog-bound night only to run aground on the rocks of a mysterious dog island right before their boat goes up in flames. As they gather on the shoreline, one of them goes missing, another is critically injured, and the other four go in search for shelter. They then decide to venture into this to a still-standing house to summon help from its occupants, if any. Luckily, there's someone still dwelling there, but unfortunately, there is something else out on the island growling in the dark, and it ain't no dog. It's hungry. So this is... that's really the write-up. Anyway.
It's good copy.
Yeah. It's from 1982. Another VHS horror favorite, now available on DVD for the first time. You guys know anything about Humongous?
I've seen the box before. I've never actually seen this.
Yeah.
I'd like to. I like that the copy refers to a dog island. Like, that's a thing that everybody just knows about.
Yeah.
You know, a dog island. No, that sounds great.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Another cult classic coming to Blu-ray this week. We've got Prophecy. You know this one, starring Christopher Walken.
Yes. Oh no, that's yeah. I'll have to watch this again.
Yeah, it spawned several sequels. The copy reads: a prime candidate for cult status. It even spawned a sequel. This apocalyptic 1995 horror flick belongs on the darker corners of the comedy horror subgenre that include Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Mimic, and Phantoms. And like those movies, it's a mixed blessing with some highlights worth savoring. It's got, like I said, Christopher Walken, supernatural, dark comedy. So, yeah, I haven't seen this since it was originally released on home video back in the mid-late 90s.
And, in high school.
Yeah, and I thought it was fun at the time, but I haven't been compelled to go back and revisit it. So... I don't know. Now that it's out on Blu-ray, maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah, I'm sure Blu-ray is really going to enhance this.
I can only hope.
Yeah, this seems like one of those movies that, you know, you enjoy mildly in high school and then just doesn't... It's not going to hold up. I don't even... Like, they should just, destroy all copies of this and not...
Oh, what? Come on.
Yeah, kind of like Suburbia?
Yeah. Yes.
One of those movies you enjoy in high school and just doesn't hold up.
Why, you guys? Did you make The Prophecy? Did you produce it? What's going on here? Why are you taking this so personally?
I'm just kidding. I have no stock in The Prophecy.
Yeah.
On Hollywood Stock Exchange.
This is... is like a movie like Hackers to me. Like, it fits into that category.
Right,
It would have only been made in like the mid to late 90s and nobody outside of that era is going to care.
Dude, Hackers does not hold up.
Of course it doesn't.
No, I really liked Hackers a lot, and I tried to watch this. This was probably like 4 years ago now, and it was like unwatchable.
Yeah, I buy that.
Yeah.
You want I should hack the planet?
Next release we have is Superheroes from earlier this year. This is a documentary about real-life people who fancy themselves superheroes and go out and fight crime. I don't know. I think this could be an interesting watch. Did you guys have any real life superheroes in your parts of the country?
Oh, I'm sure there was one. I was not privy to it.
Yeah, there was one in Cincinnati named Shadow Hair, and he was a real life crime fighter patrolling the streets of Cincinnati. But then I didn't hear anything else about him. He was on the news a couple times, but probably got murdered.
Probably. They don't have very long lifespans.
Yeah.
I think there are a few real-life superheroes in L.A., but I haven't seen them or met them yet. Until my nefarious plan hatches. And then they'll be finding me.
Another documentary coming out this week, The Weird World of Blowfly from 2010. Time hasn't mellowed caped comedian Blowfly, a.k.a. Clarence Reed, who is still dishing up lewd and rude rap ditties that could make folks half his age blush. This unflinching biopic follows the 69-year-old funk machine as he mounts a comeback tour. While such disciples as Ice-T and Chuck D discuss Reed's influence, the film also captures Blowfly in action, whether on the road with his drummer or talking at home with his live-in mom. I don't know. I always love documentaries about weird, eccentric musicians like the Rocky Erickson documentary and Daniel Johnson and things like that. And Blowfly is somebody who I'm sure would make a good subject for one of these kind of quirky documentaries. So I look forward to checking this out. You guys ever heard any Blowfly records?
Indeed.
Yeah. He's often been credited as like one of the first guys to ever like rap on record, like all the way back in the late 60s, rapping about pussy. But yeah, he's just kind of one of these novelty, you know, filth artists. But he's endured and was a huge influence on a lot of the people that, you know, started the hip-hop thing going. So, I don't know. I'm sure this is a fun watch.
Definitely.
Next DVD we have is Pound of Flesh from 2010. Based on a true story, Noah Melville, played by Malcolm McDowell, is a popular college professor and confirmed sensualist. How do you become one of those? I want to be a confirmed sensualist.
Seriously.
Who provides scholarships for gorgeous college girls through an escort service whose satisfied clients include the chairman of the school board, played by Timothy Bottoms, the chief of police, and even the mayor of their idyllic college town. When a young woman's dead body is found near the campus, the moralistic new detective in town, Patrick Kelly, played by Angus McFadden, investigates, leading him to the professor. Exposed, Noah must leave his devoted wife and daughter and flee the law. So, I don't know. Malcolm McDowell is a college pimp. I gotta admit, this kind of intrigued me.
I'll watch pretty much anything with a pimp in it, I guess.
Yeah. This wouldn't be Malcolm McDowell's first foray into pimpdom, as he played a pimp in the movie Milk Money, if you'll recall.
I will not recall that.
But yeah, I don't know. Malcolm McDowell, slutty college girls. I think I'll watch this. I'll let you know.
What if Robert Englund played a pimp? Well, you'd have to produce that movie, I think.
Yeah, I'd have to get involved in it somehow, and and I'd have to watch it like
on the reg. Like,
yeah, not only on the reg, but I'd have to watch it like simultaneously on two different TVs in order to take it all in.
That's true.
And finally, if you want a little bit of nostalgia to wipe away the image of a pimp Malcolm McDowell, you can pick up the Looney Tunes Platinum Collection Volume 1 on Blu-ray and DVD. 50 of some of the greatest Looney Tunes cartoons are cobbled together for the first time on Blu-ray, and a digibook with images and a guide by cartoon historian Jerry Beck. That's what I want to be. I want to have dual titles on my business card. Cartoon historian and confirmed sensualist.
Confirmed sensualist, yeah.
That's what I want to achieve in life. But yeah, I don't know. I'm sure these are awesome. I love the classic Looney Tunes stuff. I mean, I don't know how much Blu-ray can really enhance, you know, fucking 70-year-old cartoons, but nevertheless, I'm sure they look good, and yeah, I would like to own those. But if you like your cartoons slightly less good in terms of quality, pick up the California Raisins collection out on DVD this week.
Well, yeah. Still casually racist, though.
Will Vinton's irresistibly zany TV specials mix eye-popping claymation with off-the-wall comedy and feature some of the best R&B tunes ever. It's great family fun for all ages. The two-disc set includes the Raisins TV specials, Meet the Raisins, Raisins Sold Out, and the four classic California Raisin commercials. So, if you love...
I liked the Raisins before they sold out.
Right. But yeah. So if you enjoy the California raisin still, first of all, what year what year do you think it is?
If you do, you're not a confirmed sensualist.
Right. But yeah, this is the first time the California raisins have been available on DVD. So throw those old California raisin VHSs right out the window. They've just become obsolete.
Yeah, time to get your California raisins tattoo touched up, Parker.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait.
The one where they're fighting Freddy. I think we might need to start a Kickstarter for you to get a California Raisins fighting Freddy tattoo.
No, fight. Raisin fighting pimp Robert Englund.
Ah, that's it.
Which basically would just
Sweet
be Freddy.
Freddy.
Sweet Chili Freddy.
Sweet Chili Krueger.
Yeah, I can't wait for this to inevitably lead to the California Raisins reboot that's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Damn it.
Starring Seth Rogen and Neil Patrick Harris.
as all four voices.
Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't be the same CGI. Keep it old school. Get this DVD. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with our first film of the evening, The Man from Hong Kong from 1975, so stick around.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris-like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call in to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We're very lonely, and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now if you dare. Tell them that he sent you.
Chinese cop in town. He's beginning to annoy me. Yeah, I think he should meet with a slight accident.
Jimmy Wong Yu is the man from Hong Kong. A furious arsenal of martial arts. With his sights set on smashing organized crime.
My country, Caroline, we have a sport. We take the giant praying mantis, put him in the wooden cage, and make him fight for his life with his own kind. I thought you would enjoy such a sport.
you and Jack Wilton in a wooden cage. He's a very dangerous man.
George Lazenby is Jack Wilton. Gunrunner, dope peddler, ruthless czar of international evil.
I've never met a Chinese yet that didn't have a yellow streak.
East meets West in a head-on clash with no holds barred. Golden Harvest, who made Bruce Lee a box office smash, have joined with Australia's action specialists to produce a death-defying spectacle that staggers the senses. The man from Hong Kong knows no rules. Everyone he runs across is never quite the same again.
I understand the gunman is dead. How did that happen?
I killed him.
Really? Well, in that case, you deserve a cigar.
Thank you. I don't smoke.
Tell me, Inspector, do you often take white girls to bed?
Only on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
This is nice.
What did you expect? Acupuncture?
So do yourself a favor and answer a few questions.
省点劲儿吧, 等妈来陪我, 我也不会告诉你。
Yeah, and I love you too.
This is Australia, mate, not 55 days at Peking.
Hey, don't give me any shit.
Provoke him at your peril.
I want that lunatic stopped.
Nothing stands in his way. For long. Nobody's safe. From the man from Hong Kong.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 84. The first movie on the show tonight is The Man from Hong Kong from 1975. This is a film by director Brian Trenchard-Smith, who we have discussed a couple times on the show, first with Dead End Drive-In way back in the early days, and then again with the abortion that was Leprechaun in Space. We did our franchise horror in space show. So really a wide berth of films here. He's also directed stuff that we've talked about kind of in passing on the show, Stunt Rock being one of them, as well as a whole host of other fantastic Ozploitation films. This film stars the worst James Bond, George Lazenby, and Jimmy Wang Hu, who we discussed when we talked about Master of the Flying Guillotine. The story goes that George Lazenby is a crime lord, if you can believe that, who, to cover up his devious dealings, runs an import-export business. One of his couriers is picked up by some rough-and-tumble cops in Sydney, and they send a man from Hong Kong, who is a real loose cannon, to go pick him up. But he's not satisfied just taking down one man and seeks to destroy Jack Wilton and his entire crime syndicate. The result is jaw-dropping. It's all the craziest parts of action movies and spy movies and Skinamax and hang gliding all rolled into one. There are some really amazing dialogue and exchanges in this. There's some pretty astonishing fights. One thing that I find really amazing is the fight between the director and Jimmy Wang Hu on top of the elevator. It's supposedly real because they were not getting along, so they were actually hitting each other, which I think is kind of amazing. So I first saw this actually at the Spectacle Theater. The Cinebeasts put this on as an event, as a midnight, and it was a real blast. They actually showed a trailer for Megaforce before this, so everything really ties in together. But I thought this movie was a blast. Actually, we might have discussed this when we talked about Dead End Drive-In, but I think this is one of the movies they're watching at the drive-in.
Yeah.
Which I think is also super cool. So there's a lot of really cool stuff going on in this. It, you know, a lot of times it's just generic, you know, kind of cookie cutter in terms of, like, plot and and story, but, you know, whatever. This was the first kind of tango between Hong Kong and Australia in terms of these kind of movies. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's super fun. I think it's funny. I think the song in it is hysterical. I think it's awesome. What did you guys think of The Man from Hong Kong?
Yeah, I had been wanting to see this for a long time, ever since I saw the documentary that we talk about way too much on this show, the Not Quite Hollywood documentary. This is prominently featured in it, and there's a lot of really good behind-the-scenes stories about the making of the movie. This, unfortunately, isn't available very easily in the United States. I don't think it's ever had a proper DVD release in the U.S. I know it's had an Australian DVD release and maybe some releases elsewhere, but in the United States, a DVD, it's been hard to find, and VHS copies are pretty rare also. So, but yeah, once we tracked this down and you want to do this for the show, I was excited to watch it. And yeah, I wasn't disappointed at all. I thought this movie, you know, had really good action from the start. It really, like, well-shot action, too. Like, a lot of cool landscapes and backdrops for a lot of these fight scenes. The music was cool in it. It mixed a lot of elements of, you know, typical Hong Kong kung fu movies as well as action movies. You know, it wouldn't be an Australian movie without some crazy car chases and cars blowing up. George Lazenby, who was in not only the one James Bond movie, but he was also in Never Too Young to Die as John Stamos'
yes.
dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good to see him back in another Junk Food Dinner movie. The hang gliding was cool. Jimmy Wang Yu, you know, we talked about him a little bit when we talked about Master of the Flying Guillotine. He was kind of like the next big thing after Bruce Lee died. He was, along with like Jackie Chan, widely considered to be the person that was going to kind of take the throne as the king of kung fu. And this was kind of like his first big international movie. I think he was trying to break into, you know, at least the American market and elsewhere, break out of, you know, he was a huge star in Hong Kong, but he wanted to break out and become an international superstar, and I think he felt like this was his way to do it. And there's a lot of really good behind-the-scenes stories on Not Quite Hollywood where they talk about how he was just a complete asshole to work with, and he had, like, no regard for the Australian directors and actors who were in this movie, and he kind of wanted to run the show himself. They talk about how he thought, you know, white women were basically scum, and before, like, all of his love scenes, he would eat flies before having to kiss the Australian actresses, and I find that funny. And so, like, watching that now, like, knowing that those behind the scenes details, watching it for the first time, I couldn't help but thinking about that when I was watching the love scenes between him and a couple of the actresses in this movie. But nevertheless, you know, I thought this was really fun, good kind of mid-70s action exploitation fare. You know, it is fairly cookie cutter in terms of plot, but overall, I really liked it. I think probably one of my favorite characters in the movie is the assistant detective, Maury Gross, played by Hugh Keyes Byrne, who's like this kind of long-haired, like kind of, he's like kind of the rebel cop, and he's kind of more or less the comic relief. He has some good lines that made me laugh, and he would later show up as a toe cutter in Mad Max. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, so he's a really good actor. So I really enjoyed it. I mean, it did a good job of balancing comedy and action, and it certainly never dragged. I was thoroughly entertained throughout.
Yeah, this movie is fun. I you know, like you said, this movie has like a lot of cool backdrops for the action scenes. Like the first scene that we have, you have no idea what's going on, why people are fighting, but people are fighting like in this Australian desert with like this huge red rock, and like they're climbing up the rock, they're getting kicked down the rock.
Yeah.
Some people are driving cars around the rock. And from then, I was just like, oh, I don't care why these people are fighting. Like, this is great. I'm hooked. And then that continued on with the rest of the movie. I had no idea. Well, not that I had no idea, but I didn't care why these people were fighting. I didn't care about the crime that was going on or, you know, anything like that. Like, I was just like, man, let's get back to the fighting. And I mean, part of that was just because the fighting in this and the action is so cool, and also because, like you guys said, the plot is just, I mean, it's generic. Very generic. So, if you don't care about detective work, this is the movie for you. one thing I did like about a lot of the fight scenes in this is that it seemed that the man from Hong Kong's fighting style consisted of about like 40%. 40% of his fighting style was throwing bowls of food at people. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and flipping tables over.
Yeah.
A lot of table flipping.
And then, you know, the action had something in it that, you know, you just don't get at all ever these days, which is like these long, wide shots of fighting where you see everything. They've got everything perfectly choreographed and, you know, they show it to you rather than today where it's all just like, you know, quick 1 second chops of a guy getting punched in the face and then shot, you know, take the next shot is a guy getting kicked somewhere and then the next shot is a guy getting shot in the face. And, you know, this actually shows you the action and it's, I think it's a lot more exciting than just the quick shots and the techno music or whatever that they do in every single movie now. and it's something that'll happen later on when we talk about Silent Rage too. But yeah, I mean, this movie's fun. There's a lot of hang gliding. I think that the Hang Gliding Commission of Australia paid them tons and tons of money for their product placement that was in this movie. And I'm sure they probably paid off dividends for their, for the Sydney, Australia hang gliding tourism department.
Right.
But yeah, this movie's totally fun.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at a lot of these early Brian Trenchard-Smith movies that he did in Australia, they all kind of have similar elements. I mean, you know you're going to have big stunts. You're going to have explosions. You're going to have people getting set on fire. And the one in particular that's interesting in this is that when George Lazenby gets set on fire at the end of the movie in the big climactic fight scene between Jimmy Wang Yu and George Lazenby, again, in Not Quite Hollywood, they reveal that George Lazenby got pretty burned up because he couldn't get the jacket off as it burned. And that's pretty evident when you watch the movie. Like, you can tell that when he's trying to get that jacket off at the final fight scene, there's definitely a sense of real urgency in his face. And I guess he burned up his arm pretty badly making that scene. So, I don't know. There's just that kind of realism in a lot of his early movies where people are like Parker said, you actually see him doing it. There's a lot of real stunt work, a lot of real choreographed crazy stuff, like whether it be cars flipping over, people getting set on fire, or just long, you know, kind of kung fu fight scenes. It's all very well choreographed and never boring.
Yeah, I think my favorite bit of action in this is where these guys are like driving through, you know, like this rural area, this mountainous area, and they take a turn and then they just drive right through a dude's house.
Right.
It's magnificent.
Yeah, definitely.
I mentioned this a little bit at the beginning, but some of the dialogue in this movie is just astonishing. Nobody talks like this.
Right.
Yeah. Some of these the pickup lines and like the, you know, the kind of like deal clinchers that he uses to get these women into bed are just like, I would never say stuff like this. So it's nice to see that it works for somebody.
Yeah, a lot of the love scenes and things of that nature in this movie seem very awkward, especially, as I mentioned, because Jimmy Wang Yu had nothing but disdain for these Australian actresses. But nevertheless, I mean, like, you get scenes where, like, Jimmy Wang Yu is, like, riding a horse to, like, this fluttery love music, like, with these ladies, and then just these really awkward love-making scenes. It's those. I mean, I understand why they put them in. I mean, it's an Australian movie. They always have to have a little bit of TNA, but it's like, they just seem shoehorned in. Stick with what you know, Jimmy. But yeah, it's a shame that this movie never got an official DVD release over in the United States, because I think this is one that would definitely look good, you know, in a nice, clean digital transfer. I watched a good majority of this on YouTube, but it just sucked. Like, the you know, it's all grainy and the sound's out of sync and stuff. So I eventually went out and found a nice, a cleaner transfer of it. And it looked good, but I'd still like to see a proper, you know, fully remastered DVD edition of this in the United States sometime soon.
So yeah, I wonder what the holdup is on that.
Yeah, maybe they can't get licensing to that that song, that Sky High song.
Yeah.
That song was like a top 40 hit. I remember that song like on the radio when I was a kid.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this movie's fun. I do agree that a like a nice DVD or even Blu-ray, I think this would look gorgeous, you know, super clean and crisp, with Sydney in the backdrop there. So yeah, hopefully they'll stop doing stuff like making a Where's Waldo movie and work on getting this out on DVD.
Yeah.
I think that about wraps up our discussion of 1975's The Man from Hong Kong. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about...
Big Bad Mama.
Big Bad Grandma.
Junk Food Dinner loves you. We want you to know that we would marry you. And then we would kill your pimp and accidentally steal his drugs and move to Los Angeles with you so we could sell those drugs to Bronson Pinchot and live happily ever after. Now that you know how committed we are to you, please commit to us by giving us a good review on iTunes or by subscribing to the show. Good reviews and 5-star ratings help other people find the show. Just get on iTunes and search for Junk Food Dinner.
In a theater full of empty seats, why did you sit by me?
My daddy said to me, if I was told what I'm about to tell you, oh, how sweet my poor life now would be. I sat right down to listen. He began to speak with a fever in his head. He spoke so loud and clear that his words still haunt my ear. And this is what he said. Away from the big bad mama, though sometimes she may seem so sweet and kind. He said, keep away from the big bad mama, for she will, you know what your mind. All right.
Right there, Mr.
Angie Dickinson is Big Bad Mama.
A mother's still got some rights in this country.
Hey, you can't do that.
The hell I can't.
Paradise, Texas, 1932.
We're gonna have everything we ever wanted.
Prosperity was just around the corner at the nearest bank.
Get the money! Like John D. Rockefeller said, you gotta grasp the dynamics of money and keep the currency on the move.
Where'd you go, folks?
Why can't we be right up there with Ford, Rockefeller, Capone, and all the rest of them? The cops.
Living fast, killing faster, they blasted their way through 7 states. Angie Dickinson, William Shatner, Tom Skerritt, Big Bad Mama.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 84. The next film we're going to be talking about this evening is Big Bad Mama from 1974. This is a Roger Corman-produced movie, directed by Steve Carver, and starring Angie Dickinson as Wilma McClatchy, a woman who's living in the Depression Prohibition era with her 2 daughters, Billie Jean and Polly, played by Susan Sinnott and Robbie Lee, you might remember from Switchblade Sisters, playing Lace, who talks through her teeth, and kind of playing a similar role here. Wilma loves her 2 daughters and will do anything to give them the life she feels they deserve. So when her lover dies, she decides to take up the bootlegging business that he has left behind, but it doesn't work out, and she is constantly on the run from the law. She then goes into the bank robbing business, where she meets up with Fred Diller, played by Tom Skerritt. Wilma and Fred quickly strike up a relationship and plan on another big heist to score some money. But after a trip to the horse track, where they meet William Shatner, who plays William Baxter, Wilma quickly leaves Fred and starts hanging out with the Shat Man exclusively, thinking that he will be her meal ticket. This leads to Fred to turn to the creepy and start having relations with the teenage Billie Jean, and then later Polly in a incestuous threesome. Things just continue to get weird as they plan a robbery of a big oil company. And will Angie Dickinson and her daughters find the happiness they deserve, or will it all end like Bonnie and Clyde? Big Bad Mama is a kind of typical Prohibition era kind of gangster movie in the tradition of Bonnie and Clyde. You got a lot of old school cars racing down dirt roads, a lot of Tommy gun fights, and just a general mayhem of a Prohibition era shoot 'em up movie. But in addition, you get Angie Dickinson naked, as well as her two daughters, Robbie Lee and Susan Sennett. You get interesting performances by William Shatner and Tom Skerritt. You got Roger Corman staples like Dick Miller playing the police officer hot on their tail. It's just good fun. While there's some serious subject matter, I mean, you know, you've got the relationship between the mom and her daughters and her struggle to provide for them. It's all kept pretty light and fun by the constant banjo picking soundtrack and the typical Roger Corman exploitation style of plenty of explosions and gunfights. So I think this is a fun movie. This is one that I hadn't seen. It doesn't really get brought up too much in the canon of Corman classics like, you know, Death Race 2000 and Rock and Roll High School and Humanoids from the Deep and that kind of thing. But because it doesn't have a lot of the supernatural elements that a lot of people expect in a Roger Corman movie. But nevertheless, I think this is a lot of fun. I think everyone involved turns in really good performances. I mean, the two daughters, Billie Jean and Polly, do get kind of annoying at times. They're almost a little too childlike in a lot of scenes to be taken seriously, especially when they're put in these kind of sexual situations. But nevertheless, like I said, I think it's a fun movie, and I think it's definitely worth a watch. So I'm interested to find out what you guys thought about Big Bad Mama.
Yeah, this movie is delightful. When you first mentioned that we were going to do this, I'd never heard of it. So just from the title alone, and I guess the poster, the DVD art, I was expecting something Switchblade Sisters-esque,
right,
where somebody had to protect their turf. Mm-hmm. But not really like that. For the first minute, I was like, man, I was really amped up to watch something where somebody fought some thugs in the inner city. But, 5 minutes in, I was like, well, never mind. This is just as good, if not better. This is awesome. This is another one of those movies that the first few minutes, like, they just suck you in with all the shenanigans going on.
Right.
The movie, like you said, did seem a little bit like Roger Corman or whoever was just like, hey, Bonnie and Clyde was a good movie. Let's do that movie.
Right.
And then went ahead with it. And then later on, many years later, Rob Zombie would be like, hey, Big Bad Mama was a good movie. Maybe I'll do that movie and call it Devil's Rejects. I thought that the performances in this movie were very good for the most part. I thought William Shatner was super good in this. He was, very charismatic. I don't think I've ever watched anything with a young William Shatner. So
yeah, very, very un-Shatner in his delivery.
Yeah, he was very gentlemanly.
Yeah, and, Southern gentleman.
Yeah. And so I really liked him. I thought he was very charismatic in this. And he has a very sweaty sex scene later, which was jarring a bit.
Yeah. You almost saw William Shatner's dick. It was too close for comfort.
Too close for comfort is the exact accurate way to describe that.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, he was very good in this movie. I really enjoyed his performance. Tom Skerritt, on the other hand, I guess I've only really ever seen him in like Poison Ivy and Poltergeist 3. But so it's not like I've got... It's not like I think he's this classic actor, but I didn't really care. I don't know if it was that I didn't care for his character really in this movie or his performance, but I found him kind of flat and boring. And maybe it was just like the way he joins up with their group. Like, he's just suddenly in their group for some reason. Like, he jumps in their car and then they're just like, all right, well, we're best friends now. All right, let's do this. Right. There is a cool scene, though, where Tom Skerritt fights a bunch of oranges. And I thought that was pretty fun. Like, just for no reason, he just starts shooting a bunch of oranges. And that seemed like kind of fun. I guess I would probably want to shoot oranges, too, if I was an outlaw.
Yeah, they were all kind of gun crazy in this movie. I mean, a lot of times people would just be shooting at shit for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I had a gun, I'd probably do that too.
Yeah. It is the 30s after all. If you can't drink, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
It was a different time in America, mm-hmm. where you could just shoot a Tommy gun into a crowd and no one would really be that upset.
There's that part where they're leaving the like horse track heist and she shoots that Tommy gun like up in the air and people are just standing around like, eh.
Yeah. And then when they leave the July 4th celebration, she shoots like pretty much into that big crowd of onlookers and
people
are like, let's not take any shelter.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Yep. I read on the interwebs that to get all these cool cars, like all these 30s cars for this movie, they had to borrow them from like an antique, collector's club of these antique cars. And I found that to be weird because it's like, what do you say? Like, hey, you see these beautiful antique cars that you have that are like irreplaceable? Do you mind if we borrow them and then just blow them up and stuff? Is that good? You guys good with that?
Yeah, we're shooting a movie where you almost see William Shatner's dick. You mind if we borrow these cars?
We promised to run them into like horse manure and shoot them full of bullet holes.
Right.
We turn them.
Oh man.
Yeah, but this movie's super fun. The only thing that like I felt like was like kind of weird about it, or like kind of took you out of the movie, and this might just be nitpicky because it happened during the credits, but there's kind of like this emotional ending, like an action-packed ending with a lot of emotion and stuff, and then they do the thing where like they show like who all was in the movie during the credits, and then like the final one is like this broad showing her boobs, and they kind of like do the zoom in, like they do that on the boobs, and it kind of takes you out of the emotional ending.
Yeah. I think it more puts you back in the you just watched a Roger Corman movie.
Yeah, that's also true, but yeah. So I don't know. I felt that was weird, but that was really the only thing that I felt was weird about the movie. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think this movie's pretty awesome. I had never seen this. I actually watched this yesterday morning before I went to work. I was like, oh, this is probably a good Saturday morning before work movie, and I mean, it was. But my like real beef with this, and it's also just nitpicky, and this is totally on me because this is a movie that's just like a Bonnie and Clyde ripoff where you almost see William Shatner's dick. But everybody's reaction to everything that happens in this is so quick. Like, there is really no consequence to anything. Like, so-and-so died? Okay. So, like, we lost all our money to this crooked sheriff? Okay. Like, there's... So everything that happens in this like kind of rapid succession, and you don't really have time to like take anything in, which again, I think I'm probably asking too much of Big Bad Mama, but I definitely like this. I think it's fun. I think the music in it is pretty fun, you know, just like goofy getaway music, and I was very pleased to see Robbie Lee in this, as she was my favorite of the babes in Switchblade Sisters, so it was great to see her again. She talked through her teeth less, but she was kind of annoying. They were both pretty annoying. But Angie Dickinson, also kind of annoying. Tom Skerritt, kind of annoying. It just seems like everybody was more annoying in the 30s. But no, this is fun. You know, it's a good shoot 'em up kind of, what crime can we do now to make money? I like that they just kept trying their hand at different grifts and cons, and you know, just trying to see what worked and what didn't and stuff. So yeah, overall, super fun, good cast, cool cars, hooch.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they worked some typical Roger Corman, you know, TNA into this as well, even if it was at the expense of an incestuous threesome and goofy tassel swinging.
Right. Yeah, also making an appearance in this movie, our old friend Royal Dano.
Yep.
As Reverend Johnson. Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, a lot of mainstays in the Roger Corman universe. Yeah, this is fun. If you've never seen this, it's on Instant Watch.
Yep.
Check it out.
Yeah. Despite not doing anything with this franchise for a good, 13 years, they made a sequel, Big Bad Mama 2, in 1987, directed by Jim Wynorski. And Angie Dickinson returns to play the same role, despite the fact that they kind of imply that she dies at the end of this. Spoiler alert.
Let's go ahead and spoil this. She dies at the end of this. So we have to talk about that in order to talk about this sequel. Because right. She's a ghost, right?
You would think. The two daughters don't return. New girls, Danielle Brisabies and Julie McCullough play Billie Jean and Polly, respectively. But, yeah, I've heard this is terrible. Angie Dickinson, while she was, a little older in 1974, but still looking good, by 1987, no one wanted to see her being a sexy Prohibition-era Tommy Gunn girl. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen Big Bad Mama 2, but I've heard it's not nearly as good.
Have you seen Big Bad Mama's House?
Yeah.
Because there's a sequel to that, too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can buy both Big Bad Mama and Big Bad Mama 2 on one disc as part of the Roger Corman Cult Classics collection. So check this out and let us know if that second one's worth watching. But I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb and say it's not.
I'll wager that it's not.
Yeah. You guys got anything else on Big Bad Mama?
Well, there's a scene where William Shatner is holding people up, and as he's doing so, like he's taking their money, he says, "Beg your pardon. Beg your pardon." And I like that. I like gentlemanly thieves.
Okay, when you say "beg your pardon" like that, that's nice.
Well, I'm hoping to star in the reboot. I'm hoping to get that part, that William Shatner part.
Big Bad Parker.
Starring Jason Statham as me, and then me as William Shatner.
Poster Baxter. The Gentlemanly Penguin Bank Robber.
Yeah, I go around robbing the banks because I need to buy a heater because it's so cold in Antarctica.
Well, in addition to Big Bad Mama, director Steve Carver later went on to direct a couple well-known Chuck Norris movies like Lone Wolf McQuade and An Eye for an Eye. So that is a nice segue to wrap Big Bad Mama up, and we'll be right back with our next movie, Chuck Norris's Silent Rage, so stick around.
Did you know that there are two ways to help out Junk Food Dinner? The first way involves sacrificing a goat or a human baby on an altar made of dragon bones. Or, next time you're on iTunes, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can write the comment that says everyone should listen to Junk Food Dinner. You can add as many exclamation points as you want. This will help more people find the show on iTunes. Recording each episode of Junk Food Dinner is the most physically and emotionally taxing activity known to man. It leaves us exhausted and bloody after the show. The least you can do is give us a good review.
Nobody call the police, you must be a Leroy! master fighter of our time. But not even he could imagine the power of the indestructible man he is about to face. A creation of science whose only thought is to survive.
That's it, Daniel.
The unstoppable terror of silent rage. Now, Chuck Norris must destroy him.
Dan, watch out!
In a final battle to the death and beyond. Silent Rage.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The last movie we'll be talking about is Silent Rage. This is a 1982 film starring Chuck Norris. If you remember a few weeks ago, or a few months ago, I'm not very good at time, we did Invasion USA, and that got me real pumped up on Chuck Norris, who I'd watched as a kid, but never really revisited him as an adult. And seeing as to how I was so pumped up for Invasion USA, I've been wanting to get that pumped up again. And so far I've been failing. We did another, that movie was directed by, I think, Joseph Zito. And we did another Joseph Zito shortly after that called Red Scorpion that wasn't nearly as good. So being the detective I am, I figured, well, if it's not the director who made that movie so good, it's got to be Chuck Norris. Got to revisit another Chuck Norris and relive that magic. And a few listeners requested that we do Silent Rage, saying that this is another one of those quintessential Chuck Norris movies. One of the better Chuck Norris movies before he started doing movies where he was like a martial arts guy teaming up with dogs and teaming up with Jonathan Brandis.
Right. Like that.
But so I got this movie a few weeks ago on Netflix and watched it, and I was like, well, another Chuck Norris good time here. I'm going to have to do it on the show. And this movie concerns Chuck Norris. He's a sheriff in a small town. And, in this small town, this movie opens up, I guess it should be said, with a crazy guy sort of living in this house, which I guess you could do in the 80s. Like, you don't see that much these days, but back in the olden days of Prohibition America, people could just live in your house, and that was, like, perfectly reasonable. If you had a spare room, invite a crazy guy to live there. Nobody would think twice. And that's how this movie opens up. We've got a guy living in a house. You know, he's, like, sweaty. He's calling his doctor. You can tell something's wrong. And, he goes out into the yard, gets an axe, comes back into the house, which is, like, one of the coolest shots for my money that, like, in movies. Like, I thought that shot was, like, just really amazing. Like, he just goes out, it's broad daylight, there are kids playing in the yard, grabs an axe, it's like a real long shot, a wide shot, and walks back into the house with this axe. And I think that shot, like, really sets up this movie, and I think that was really great. But he comes back in, kills everybody. Chuck Norris, being the sheriff, arrives at the scene. They have a tussle, these two guys, where there's a lot of kicking, a lot of high kicking, because that's what Chuck Norris does. Chuck Norris is a real badass. You know, he beats the guy up with like a stick of wood, and cuffs him, throws him in the police car, and then the guy's doctor, Dr. Tom Hellman, played by Ron Silver, shows up, and he's all, "This is my a patient. You know what's going on here?" Blah. And in the meantime, the crazy guy breaks out of his handcuffs, breaks out of the cop car, just totally kicks the damn door right off the cop car. And this is before he becomes supernaturally powerful, by the way, so you're in for quite the climax here. And then he kills a bunch of cops, and then the cops shoot him up, and they're like, oh, well, this guy's dead, this crazy guy, who I forget his name, by the way, he's just the crazy guy. And so they send him to the morgue, and then some nerdy scientists are like, well, this guy's kind of dead and stuff, but we can, like, put some science into him and make him an unstoppable killing machine if we want. And then they do. And, the nerds, the scientist nerds, fight about this a little bit. Like, the scientist guys fight with Ron Silver about whether or not they should, you know, do experiments on this guy's dead body. And it's real funny to watch guys in lab coats get into, like, a real heated fight. You wouldn't expect that You don't see that in many movies, I suppose. And so they're doing that. All the meanwhile, Chuck Norris is going up about, like, while they're sort of stuck in the middle of this science fiction horror film, Chuck Norris is stuck in the middle of this kind of action movie, you know, him and his dim-witted partner, you know, chasing down street toughs and stuff like this. And Chuck Norris is like, you know, having sex with broads who are like, man, you're never going to get in my pants, Chuck Norris. Don't even try. And then they cut to Chuck Norris inside of that chick's pants, having sex with her. real, real cool stuff like that. Chuck Norris runs into this group of thugs in a restaurant. And, you know, they're like, hey, Chuck Norris, we're going to take over your town. You're a piece of crap. And Chuck Norris is like, nah, you know, I'm going to beat you guys up. And, like, he kind of gets tough on them. And then Chuck Norris is like, you get out of here. You know, and the street thug is like, hey, this is not over, Chuck Norris. And Chuck Norris, in full array of his acting capabilities, says, it better be. And and I really like that part. But then later on, Chuck Norris is driving around again with his partner, and they see, like, the thug's car or whatever outside of a bar. And then Chuck Norris is like, oh, we got to go see what's going on in this bar. But it's like, if Chuck Norris told that guy that better be the end of it, why is he picking another fight with him? Why is he chasing him down? I thought that was kind of weird. But it's probably for the best that he did, because these guys took over this bar and they were threatening the bartender and stuff. So Chuck Norris has a good eye for crime. So I can respect him. But yeah, this movie, you know, like I said, it's a mix between like a horror, science fiction, action. There's some comedic elements in there. It's a really cool mix of a bunch of genres. And I think they're all done really well. Like, the action scenes with Chuck Norris are really good. There's like a lot of tension in the horror scenes. Like, the science fiction stuff is pretty cool with the scientist nerds. And I think this movie's pretty cool. So I'm eager to hear what you guys have to say about this movie, because if you guys like this Chuck Norris movie, then I can feel justified to keep on doing Chuck Norris movies on the show.
Well, I gotta be honest. I did like this movie, but I might talk about how I didn't like it, because I don't want to keep doing Chuck Norris movies.
But if you did like this movie and you liked Invasion USA, why would you want to stop doing Chuck Norris movies?
Because at some point, we're going to run out of good Chuck Norris movies.
That's true.
And at some point, we're going to teeter into that internet meme kind of Chuck Norris mentality. And I want to steer clear of that.
Yeah, I don't want to steer clear of bad Chuck Norris movies, because they're probably so bad that they're great. But I do want to be clear that none of us care about that Chuck Norris meme.
Yeah, let's be real. I mean, this came up when we talked about Invasion USA. I think that shit is stupid and played out. But Silent Rage is awesome. this movie is fucking cool. I would say I like this as much as Invasion USA, especially because it has elements of all that other stuff in it. Although, to be fair, this might have created that Chuck Norris meme, because the poster for this is like, science created him. Only Chuck Norris can stop him. Not his character.
Yeah.
Only Chuck Norris, the man, can stop him. So I think that's really funny. And that's obviously like a total cash in on, you know, Chuck Norris's C-list credibilities there. Yeah, this movie's fun. There's some cool camera work. There's some cool action and horror and sci-fi. There's kind of a lot of genres in this, which was kind of distracting, because I'd be like, yeah, all right, like, horror movie. Oh, no. Action movie. Like, oh, no, wait, sci-fi movie. But that's fine. I think I'm expecting too much out of this film. But all in all, I enjoyed this.
Yeah, absolutely. I also enjoyed this. I thought it was a lot of fun. However, I do have to be honest, I was kind of slightly disappointed in it, but I think only because of the fact that I had built this up quite a bit in my mind. When we were, you know, when you read about this movie on paper, it just sounds too good to be true. And if you hadn't seen it yet, you wonder why you haven't seen this. And it was good. It did live up to a good majority of the hype that I had in my head for it, but it did kind of let down on some levels. The one level that in my mind it did let down in is, I don't know if this is because the movie is called Silent Rage, but a little music in this movie would have gone a long way. There are so many fight scenes, like, especially like the scene at the beginning with the murder in the house, and then the bar scene also comes to mind where he kicks all those dudes' ass at the bar. There is no music in those fucking scenes whatsoever, and it makes some of the fight scenes really fucking awkward. Like, I don't expect there to be, you know, some big orchestral score or anything, but just something, you know, like
a little Skinnered would have been nice.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Well, I mean, just anything.
A little Limp Bizkit would have been nice.
Oh. No.
Wrong again.
Yeah. But just something to kind of keep the fight scenes from being just so kind of awkward. But nevertheless, I mean, and also after watching Jimmy Wang Yu, real martial arts stuff, seeing Chuck Norris's white ass, it does kind of.
Yeah, it's a stark contrast.
Yeah. And Chuck Norris, of course, is one of the most wooden actors ever. And that was the case in Invasion USA, too. But it doesn't matter. I mean, he's Chuck Norris. He's doing what he's paid to do, which is kick ass and look tough in a mustache and a cowboy hat. and he certainly does that in this movie. This movie also has a lot of really good character actors in it. We've got William Finley from Phantom of the Paradise as one of those nerdy scientists that bring John Kirby back to life. We've also got Stephen Furst, who was Flounder in Animal House, playing Charlie, Chuck Norris's partner, who's kind of the comic relief. Lots of fat jokes on his part, and he gets really excited when he sees a girl's boobs, which I thought was really funny. Like during that bar scene, one of the biker girls shows Charlie her boobs in an effort to kind of taunt him and distract him, and Chuck Norris sends him out to go call for backup, and he spends the entire time talking to the dispatcher about how nice the boobs were. I thought that was really funny. But yeah, like I said, overall, this is a really fun movie, and it does have a lot of cool elements to it, and I definitely would recommend checking this out, especially for people who like kind of campy early 80s sci-fi action horror hybrids. And I also really like the title credits and the opening, like, credits of this movie. I thought were really cool. But my only gripe, I wish there was just a little bit more music. Give it a little bit more dynamic. But it is Silent Rage, after all.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a scene in this movie that I thought was real weird, where, like, Chuck Norris is hanging out with this girl, and they're in a hammock, and he's, like, doing his best to rock the hammock back and forth. And I was like, man, Chuck Norris, that's not what a hammock is for, dude. Like, it's a hammock, not a ride. Like, just chill in it. Like, that's what it's for. So I was, like, kind of mad at his character.
Hammocks are supposed to be relaxing.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, Kevin, like, you know, there's a lot of real wooden acting from Chuck Norris. And in this, I think it's, like, kind of, like, cute and cozy that he's, like, a bad actor. Because he's got, like, you know... you know, he's got a lot more lines in this, like not that many lines because they realize he's a bad actor, but he's got a lot more lines in this than in Invasion USA, I think. And in that, like they kept him pretty quiet in that. And mostly he just told people when it was time to die and stuff. But,
yeah. He really only had one line in that.
Yeah. But yeah, in this, like he's got a few more lines and it's really his bad acting is really cute, I think. And you know, especially like when he's trying to hit on this girl and stuff, and you imagine, you know, that for this guy to mack on this chick who's like, man, no way you're going to have sex with me, Chuck Norris. I'm not having none of that. And then immediately has sex with her. Like, you imagine that he should be saying these lines like a real smooth guy, but it's just
time
so wooden.
Bang.
It's time. But this movie has a real cool climax where Chuck Norris inevitably fights this monster who cannot be stopped. And, you know,
stops
like,
him.
Yeah, he stops him. The end. So we'll be right back with the end of Junk Food Dinner. But yeah, so they're fighting. And like I said earlier with The Man from Hong Kong, like there's a lot of real long, wide shots where you get to see everything that's happening. And I think it's really cool. I mean, the fighting's probably not as good as that movie. Not at all, probably. But it's still cool just to see that. See a director do a fight scene like that, like, it's just so goddamn refreshing since it's never like that anymore. So I really like that fight scene. And then also it should be said that Chuck Norris defeats the monster by giving him the FU, John Cena's move in the WWE, through some wood and into a well. So I thought that was really cool. I bet that John Cena completely ripped that off from this movie.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I never would have known that had you not said that.
Well, I want to inform you guys of that, and I want the three listeners of Junk Food Dinner who also watch wrestling to be aware of that.
Well, I was going to say, he doesn't technically kill this bad guy. He just throws him down the well, and if we are to believe that nothing could kill this man, then he'll just be down that well for a very long time.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome. Like, they do all this stuff, you know, like they stab this bad guy, they shoot him, they blow him up, and then, you know, they throw him down this well, and then Chuck Norris is like, well, let's call it a day. Your job well done.
That's all he should have said.
Yeah. yeah, so Chuck Norris should have realized that this guy was not dead, but...
he probably just wanted to leave.
And leave it open for a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, or maybe this guy... became the well monster from that new episode of Walking Dead.
There you
go. Spoiler alert, I guess.
Yeah.
The director of this movie, Michael Miller, prior to directing Silent Rage, he directed a couple movies that look pretty good, a couple exploitation movies. We've got Street Girls in 1975 about prostitutes, and then you also got Jackson County Jail, like a woman in prison movie, with Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, all right.
And then after Silent Rage, he just started directing nothing but TV movies until present day. Yeah. So
most of those TV movies are based on Danielle Steel books too.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, okay. All right. That's where you're gonna lose me. Because you said that, and I was like, shit. Why don't we just do like a TV movie episode? A lot of those are good. But no.
No.
Yeah. Probably not these. Dangerous Passion might be pretty good.
It sounds dangerous and passionate, but...
And World's Deadliest Volcanoes.
Is Chuck Norris in that?
Let's find out. There are very few details about this on IMDb.
This movie's fun. And, like I said, I don't want to start becoming this, like, you know, kind of fourth wave champion of Chuck Norris. But I think the two Chuck Norris movies we've done on the show, I guess have we done more than that?
No, I think just two.
Okay, good. Yeah, the two Chuck Norris movies we've done on the show have both been pretty enjoyable. So at least watch those two.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lone Wolf McQuaid came pretty highly recommended from listeners too, which we might have to check those out. But I do enjoy that we're batting 100 with Chuck Norris, so I might not ever pick another Chuck Norris movie. That way we can just say we batted 1,000 and
retire champion.
Yeah. Well, that does it for Silent Rage. We're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna come back, and then we're gonna turn your dead bodies into unstoppable killing machines.
JunkFoodDinner.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. Go to JunkFoodDinner.com for the latest episodes of the show. We also have all of our past episodes. You will also find news about the show, movie news, trailers, funny stuff, and links to our friends. You can also leave us log comments, because that makes us happy. We hope our website will be a good way for you to spend time during the downtime in life, when celebrities are not going hilariously crazy, and when the Warcraft servers are down.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
We'll be right back.
All right, well, that just about wraps up episode number 84 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you'd like to get in contact with us and let us know what you think about the show, please do by sending us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Or you can get in contact with us via Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to our Facebook and Twitter accounts on our website, junkfooddinner.com. Visit us there for all the latest news and goings-on in the world of Junk Food Dinner. You can find all of our back episodes, stream them directly from the site, or download them for future listening. Or click on the link to subscribe to us on iTunes and have the show delivered directly to your iTunes as soon as it's available. Also, you can catch up with us on Stitcher if you use that to listen to your podcast. Just search for Junk Food Dinner on Stitcher and listen to us that way. If there's a way that you get your podcast and we're not on it, please let us know. Again, by sending us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, and we will do our best to get Junk Food Dinner on every podcast listening software there is out there. Make sure you tune in next week. We have a review of the late night TNA action master, Andy Sedaris. When we take a look at three of his movies, we're going to be looking at Stacy from 1973, Hard Ticket to Hawaii from 1987, and Guns from 1990. So that should be a lot of fun. Look forward to a lot of boobs and explosions and exotic locales. So it should be a good episode. So make sure you definitely tune in for that. So until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Prado, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner saying adios, everybody. We will see you next time.